You're listening to Face Off, episode 111, recorded March 7th, 2011. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I am feeling hot, hot, hot. I am your first host, Jade Robbins.
And I am your other excited host to be with you this evening, Mark Sanborn.
In this podcast, we talk about all kinds of things involving web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. At the top of the show, that is the group known as Arrow singing their hit, Hot, Hot, Hot. Which it actually is not hot, hot, hot right now where we're at. It's been a pretty cold winter. Hey, as always, you can get the show notes for this episode. I forgot to say this. You got to remember this stuff by going to faceoffshow.com. You get all the links and all the cool stuff we talk about in this episode. Let's get into our news and follow-ups. First thing first, Mark Sanborn, the Knicks tutor, Linux machine down for the count. What is happening over there?
Well, you know, I did my upgrade. You know, I did my apt-get update and upgrade on my Ubuntu box that I run. And I guess it did a kernel update because I haven't updated in a little while. And something to do with the bootloader, Grub, got messed up. And so I can't even boot into it, you know. And I could get a live CD out and go in and fix it, and I probably should since I am, you know, the Knicks tutor.
Yes, exactly.
But I don't know. I'm probably just going to format it because my data is in the cloud.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
I use Dropbox and I can do that stuff.
Totally. No, I agree with you. It's same thing. I have no fear of formatting, as one would call it, just for that same reason. I have everything. Most of my work's in Dropbox. Anything else that isn't in Dropbox that is too big is on my Drobo, which is a pretty secure storage mechanism. I just need to find a way to duplicate that. But yeah, that's a good feeling, though, isn't it? I mean,
It is. Like, I don't even feel like I need to go in and double check and, like, make sure I got stuff, but even though I probably should. I even have things like my bash config, like, you know, anything that I have ever set up. I basically make config files on Dropbox, and then I do a symbolic link for Windows people. It's kind of like a shortcut to your file, to your config files, and that's, you know, so I'm pretty much set up. I just, the only thing I did forget is, and it's part of it is because it's new to me, is the dual monitor setup.
I can get that back for you.
I did not save my Xorg config file.
It's easy. See, that's the thing is, when you've been doing dual monitors in Linux long enough, like I have, to be honest with you, you figure out the tricks. It used to be it was a pain. You actually had to configure your Xorg. But now, so if you have an NVIDIA card, all you have to do is go into the NVIDIA TwinView and tell it to set them up as two different X sessions, which is terrible. I don't know if you know, but it's terrible. It's this terrible setup where it doesn't act the way you want. But if after you tell it to use two X sessions and then tell it to go back to one large desktop, it works exactly the way you want it. But if you do one large desktop to start with, it doesn't work the way you want it. It is literally one large desktop. You can't like maximize one screen on one on or a window in one screen. But if you do two X sessions and then one large desktop, it works. Don't ask me how it works. I just know it did. And that's the little
trick. It doesn't make any sense, Jerry.
Oh, I know, George Costanza. It makes no sense at all. Let's move on to our next news and follow up. So we talked about we were doing our breakfast 3-day breakfast challenge. One of the things that we were talking about was trying to eat eggs. I like poached eggs. One of the things, the geek tools we mentioned possibly, was a microwave egg poacher. I have a follow up because I actually purchased one at a local grocery store. It was like $2. And the verdict is they are crappy. Holy cow. Do not poach an egg in the microwave. And it makes total sense now that I think about it, right? The way a microwave works is it sends microwaves through the food, exciting the water molecules inside to cook the things like that. But so assuming that a microwave egg poacher could somehow cook the white but leave a runny yolk is just impossible. And so every yolk was hard. They're like little hockey pucks. They were terrible. I cannot endorse them.
Well, that is sad to say, but I'm glad you have informed us of the crappiness of the egg poachers.
But in Similar news. Actually, I went to Bed Bath & Beyond, and they had actually the little silicone egg poachers. They're like this little silicone cup that you can put inside boiling water inside a pan, and then you crack an egg inside. Those work great. Mm. I'll put a link to those in the show notes, too. I forgot to do that. Don't let me forget, because they actually work really great. It's nice because then you don't have egg chunks in the pan. I mean, it was just boiling water in the pan, so really you can just kind of wipe the pan out and reuse it, and then just clean your little silicone egg poachers.
I'm glad we could all learn from your quest to cook the perfect poached egg.
Well, you know, the thing is, nothing will ever be as good as just learning to poach an egg in boiling water by itself. That is very good. You get this nice little cute egg. There's sort of two different ways to cook it in the boiling water. Either way, you get this nice sort of thick but runny yolk. It's great. I love poached eggs. But the thing is, delicious things take time, and that's what the poaching egg is hard. And so even the silicone thing is good. It's not perfect. If you want a good poached egg, you gotta just hit your knuckles down and do it. You gotta knuckle down and get it done. So,
speaking of knuckling down and getting stuff done, we've got Hipmunk, which now has added hotel searching.
Hipmunk was a web app we talked about. It was a really super awesome, dead simple way to like catch flights and stuff. But now you can also book your hotel too.
So you might ask yourself, why do we need another service kind of like this? And it's because a lot of those services do get kind of clunky with their interfaces and add a ton of stuff. What I liked about Hipmunk is it was a lot a lot cleaner and easier to use than some of those other ones.
Yeah, I mean,
and now that they've added hotel search, that's cool.
Yeah, it was funny. I didn't really know that this was like a startup. When I first saw it, I thought it was like some guy's like 20% project or something he worked on at home for fun to make booking flights easier. But like apparently this is a startup with funding behind it and stuff, and it explains why they're moving so fast and doing so well. I thought it was good. I thought it was cool they kind of did that at first. So the interface was so simple. You know, you just sort of assume that anything that's sort of funded is going to have this big, huge, clunky interface no matter what. You know, it's just like if there's money involved in it, it's going to get clunky and crappy. So that's why I thought Hipmunk was, and I thought it was just someone sort of one-off. But as you can see now, they're really brilliant. But they still keep that really simple user interface. You can sort flights by things like how big of a pain they are, which is sort of like how early or late do they leave. You know, like if you don't want to be leaving at 5 in the morning, you can sort by minimize your layover time. And now you can also book your hotel too. So that's great. I think Hipmunk is really cool. And especially as someone who doesn't fly a whole lot. I mean, I don't fly a whole lot, so I think it's awesome. Well, I guess as someone who doesn't fly a lot, when we booked our tickets for CES last year on the Allegiant website, even our friend Rob found this out. It's like those sites are horrible. We were playing basically sort of what we call a plane ticket roulette as to who could get the lowest. And we were comparing notes like, how low did you get it, Rob? And he'd be like, oh, I got it down to like 230. And I was like, oh, okay. And I'd go through it again to get it down to 230. And it's like, oh, I got 180. And he's like, oh, well, now I got to get 182. And it was just miserable.
I was like, what button didn't I check? You got to like go through the source and find like the hidden buttons and stuff.
It was terrible. Man. So thank goodness for sites like Hipmunk that make it easy and doing a good job adding more features. Our next bit of follow-up and news is that I saw an article on TechCrunch that Square, which we actually talked a bit of follow-up about that and a couple weeks ago, is now processing $1 million in mobile payments per day.
Wow, that's a lot. And I have to say, Square has come in really handy for getting your money and paying back stuff and splitting up, you know, tabs and going
totally
out and paying your friends back.
I mean, we use it like we would go to Costco and be like, oh man, I don't need 20 pounds of peanut butter. Do you want to split this? You know, and be like, oh, okay. And then we just whip out Square and square up really.
Yeah. And you know, it's good for someone that's kind of like a contractor, small business, things like that, you know, go to a client and get a down payment or, things like that. It's like having one of those credit card processing machines in your backpack. It's
small. And actually, they just recently, they got rid of, if you do a card swipe, this is probably a follow-up we should have done as well. If you do a card swipe, they no longer charge you the 15-cent transaction fee. It's just the percentage, which is really super low. I can't remember the exact percentage, but super low. So they're not even taking a cut per transaction now if you swipe the card, which is, you know, a pretty secure transaction.
Very nice.
So thanks for Square. Hey, last little bit of follow-up we have, and I'm not going to read the whole email, but I just want to say one of our listeners, Levi Baker, he actually sent us some programming rules of thumb that we're going to cover this episode. So I just want to say thank you, Levi, and we'll be sure to give you some props as we hit into our topic. That reminds me, actually, Mark, that this episode was brought to us by the folks over at AgileTask. I hear they're a really cool group of guys building this application. AgileTask is a task tracking application featuring an agile workflow, tagging for organization and achievements. AgileTask, your lightweight personal backlog tool. Check it out by going to agiletask.me. They're cool guys over in that team. I wish I was skilled and awesome enough to work with them.
With that, we've got our geek tool, which is made by our favorite company, Inatech, which is the S-Cat cat training aid. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Dear. So we recently, you know, Rob and I came down to visit you, and we got to see a little bit of your cat, whose name is Bert. Got to see him in action. I came home to my cat, and I realized our cats are out of control. All right, they are cats gone wild. Cats gone wild. So... this is actually the Inatech SCAT, it's like CAT, cat training aid. What it is really is basically a motion sensor on top of a can of compressed air. So you put this little thing in an area you don't want your cat to get up, like on the counters, in a garbage can or something like that, just so long as he'll set off the motion sensor. And when that motion sensor gets set off, it just will give a little burst of compressed air, helping deter the cat and make him, you know, because the hard part, like I find with my cat, is when I'm around, he's an angel. Like he knows, you know, that Jade's in the house, and if he gets up on the counters and starts chewing on my Arduino, that he's going to be in trouble. But it's when I go to bed, you know, I don't want to lock him in the bathroom all night. You know, I feel bad. So I've been trying to, you know, let him run around the house, but he's running amok because he knows I'm asleep. He can hear me snoring. So I'm going to get this Inatech SCAT training cat aid so I can teach him not to get on the counters. And I happen to know that your cat has trouble with a couple things because I went to your house and I used your bathroom, and I noticed that there was not a paper towel or roll of toilet paper in sight.
Yes, I have to store them underneath the sink in a drawer away from him, because if I leave one out, or even, I'll tell you, so he's learned how to open drawers, and if he finds toilet paper, he will take them and shred them and just make paper confetti all over the ground. And he's actually, so I ended up like zip tying the drawers shut, and he now goes through the sink cupboard and gets through to the drawers from underneath.
Oh dear.
It's amazing. I don't know how he's figured it out.
Well, but you need this, because now you could put this like in your cabinet, and when he opens up the cabinet, he'll get a little burst of air in the face and it'll freak him out. Hopefully train him. I thought the funny part was, too, that you have this little note on it. You have an empty toilet paper roll in your bathroom, and written on the cardboard tube is a note that says, hey, if you need some toilet paper, it's on the opposite cabinet. It was hilarious. Yep.
Well, you know, you got to do what you got to do when you have cats that are running amok.
Exactly. Cats gone wild. All right, let's go into our web apps. The first web app made a lot of news, rippled the world. It made ripples in the web technology news world because it was a site actually made by Microsoft called IE6Countdown.com. And it's a really cool website. A lot of people were really angry at Microsoft about this. I think it's silly. Because I think this is a great thing. It's Microsoft recognizing their product is inferior. They need to, you know, to be fair, so what it is, it's Internet Explorer Countdown. It's, you go and it's an infographic telling you sort of the percentage of Internet Explorer 6 users around the world, sort of like what browser, you know. So apparently, you know, 34.5% of China still uses Internet Explorer 6.
Yeah.
Because it's full of pirated copies of Windows XP, just full. But, you know, so it's Microsoft saying, you know, we know i6 isn't great. We're going to try and do our part to try and get people to not use it. So if you here's what you can do. You go to this website. They'll even give you some JavaScript so you can put a little slider bar. So if someone comes to your site using IE6, this little slider bar at the top comes out and says, and it works in IE6, surprisingly, that says, you know, you need to upgrade your browser. It's insecure. And it gives them instructions on how to upgrade to IE8.
I want you to tell me who has the lowest usage of Internet Explorer 6. Which country is that?
I don't know.
That?
Finland looks pretty good. I think Finland has a pretty low percentage.
Interesting. So I would assume that the U.S. has it, but that's pretty cool.
No way. We have lots of grandmas and grandpas still using old copies.
That's amazing. China has 34%.
Yeah, it is. Anyways, check it out. Go to IE6Countdown.com and quit ragging on Microsoft. It's funny. People were like, this is a site by Microsoft. They tell people to upgrade to IE. And I was like, well, what? This is the best thing a big, giant company like Microsoft will ever do. They're never going to tell you to go download Firefox or Chrome. So just shut up about it. You know, be happy that they're trying to do their part to get rid of their, you know, because normally Microsoft would be the type of company like, as long as they're using Internet Explorer, it's all I do. I just want them to use it forever. You know, here they're doing their part.
I have a funny story. I was kind of looking at some cars over the weekend, and I went into the car dealer's guy's office, and he was using Internet Explorer 6. And I was I was like, you know, can you do a Kelly Blue Book on my car? And he's like, well, you know what's funny is my computer hasn't been in the last 2 weeks has not been able to go look up a quote. And I was like, well, what do you mean? And he like showed me, and I guess the Kelly Blue Book site doesn't support IE6 anymore, a lot of sites have decided to do. And I was like, you know, you should upgrade that because there's some security things. And it was just funny to see that, you know, like in the wild, in the real, people still using it. Because, you know, we're in the tech world and we're kind of insulated from that and kind of don't get to see that very much. And
well, if you live in the realm of web developers, it's like IE6 you haven't used for like 5 years. I mean, it's crazy to even think about. I mean, 2 years ago, it was just a pain in the rear to have to support it. But I think for the most part, most professionals have kind of said IE6 is out the window unless you have a special case. And so, yeah, it is out there. It's in the wild. And get ready because... Help do your part. Go to the IE6Countdown.com and help get rid of this monstrosity that this terrible, terrible browser that we call Internet Explorer 6. Let's get on to our next web app that was sent to us via Philip Downer, who's a friend of ours here in Bozeman. It's called findthebest.com, and it's a really simple sort of concept. It's like, I just want to find the best of something. But really the cool part about it too is it's not reviews. It's just a compilation of information that allows you to sort of sort and do what you want. So let's say business economy, I'm going to find the best of consumer banking because I don't think enough people do that anyways. You should be trying to find the best bank possible. There's different criteria to what you want in a bank. Some people want a nice local bank. Some people want an internet bank with better rates. So you can go to this. And what it is this sort of giant data table of interesting things that you can sort by, you can filter, like I can, you know, only FDIC savings banks, only national banks. I can put a slider between their domestic deposits 2010, the number of branches. And it's just sort of a way to filter and get all this data on a particular thing in one spot. It's really awesome.
Very cool. I was looking at the best ski resorts. I was hoping to see some Montana stuff, but is one here, actually. Big Mountain Resort. Top dozen or so.
Yeah. Well, again, it depends on like what you're sorting by and what you think too. Cause like they have like, looking at the banks one, what's cool is you can go to the bottom and they'll tell you kind of how they got this list, how they got this information. So find the best consumer banking app organizes, does the bank name, charter class, blah, blah, blah. Where is it? It's like they got it from, oh goodness. I'm trying to think of it. They had it. Go ahead.
When I was doing the ski resorts, I was searching by skiable acres, but you can easily do vertical, which would be a lot of France and Switzerland stuff.
Okay, here it is. So like at the bottom, they'll tell you where they got the information. Like they got their consumer banking directories. They got all this information from the FDIC saving banks, the Federal Reserve member banks, Federal Reserve non-member banks, National Bank, Bank Saving Association banks. So you can go and see where they got their list, where they got the information. Just really cool. I think it's just a really cool way to sort of get information listed in one place, let you sort of filter it and sort it however you want it. It's not like, you know, I mean, there's a lot of sites. Like I was looking for a bank earlier this year and I was like, well, this is based on our ratings. You're like, well, I don't know if you're being paid to blog that or if you work for them. You know, this way I can just sort of look at the information I want and make a decision that way.
If you select multiple selections and then click compare, it will actually bring up, you know, a lot more information.
There you go.
Like I did antivirus programs and it said, you know, this one does anti-rootkit, this one doesn't, this one does keyloggers, this one doesn't.
Side by side.
Side by side. It's got prices, 4 out of 5 on CNET rating. It's kind of amazing the data they have on the different things.
Yeah, I'm going to check it out because I am looking for a laptop. Do they do that? Do they have like laptops, smartphones? Slate tablets, ebook readers, GPS now call. Well, there's 63 subcategories on technology. There better be one on laptops. Anyways, check it out. Findthebest.com. It's super cool. You can waste a lot of time that way. Thank you, Phil, for sending it our way, because I really dig it. If you have some news, a follow-up, or web application, I don't know, maybe like a geek tool or a topic idea, somebody we should interview or something, go to faceoffshow.com/feedback. Let us know. Send us an email, studio@faceoffshow.com. We'd love to hear from you guys, like Levi and Philip have done. They've helped us out. Really, really makes us happy when people help out with the show. And speaking of things that help out the show, I'd like to thank our second sponsor, Rocket Ship It. Rocket Ship It is the complete web-based multi-carrier shipping solution for small businesses and developers. Shipping rates, integrated tracking, and labels for UPS, FedEx, and USPS shippers. Rocket Ship It is shipping made easy. Go to rocketship.it.
We also love those guys. They do some great work.
I don't know. I can't vouch for them. Anyways,
all right, let's get into our topic this week, which is a continuation on from last week, which is programming rules of thumb.
Yeah, we found a lot of these too. So really awesome. Go ahead.
Let's our first one actually was suggested by Levi Baker in his email, and that is dry. So
don't get wet, right? I mean, if does this like always bring a towel, like from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
I should preface this with most of these are going to have the, you know, acronyms are going to be kind of official rules of thumb. Last episode, we kind of just talked about general rules of thumb and kind of went over some things. And these are going to be a little bit more specific. DRY, so dry. It's not, you know, dry with a towel like Hitchhiker's Guide, but it stands for don't repeat yourself.
Yeah.
You know, as programmers and computers, whenever you're doing something and you find yourself doing the same thing over and over again, probably there is something, you know, going wrong, or it's probably design.
Levi says that when doing DRI, common functionality can be extracted into functions or classes and patterns.
This one is so often stated that it even has a couple more acronyms. Oh, duplication goodness. Is evil. Die. Once and only once, OAOO, single point of truth, or SPOT, single source of truth, SSOT.
Yeah, so look at what you're doing. You know, like we always talk about, like the sort of rule of three, right? If you do the same thing or something very similar, you know, around three times, like maybe that should be extracted into its own class or brought into its own sort of thing by itself. It's a code smell. One of the code smells you can get is duplication. Like we were looking at Metric Foo a long time ago, and one of its tools did a code smell, and that was one of it we looked for. Look for just basically, you know, things that look really, really similar, and it's kind of like, yeah, it looks like you may have duplicated this. Like getters and setters are classic, right? This is why one of the reasons a lot of people like Ruby is because in a class you can just say add or accessor, and it'll make, you know, it'll make those for you. You don't have to basically have, you know, 10 different methods that just, you know, let you get and set the variable. Is pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, if you have a lot of lines of code that look really similar, but they have like one argument different or something, you could like a MySQL connection, you know, connecting each time and then doing something. A lot of times you can just, you know, make a function for that.
Yep.
I guess.
Extract it out to its own thing.
Our second one is YAGNI, or you ain't gonna need it, which is another suggested one by Levi Baker. And the idea with this is that, you know, you shouldn't add functionality until it's absolutely necessary. And some of the reasons for this is, you know, adding that you also have to do more testing, you know, to do that functionality. Oftentimes the time is better spent, you know, improving the code that you actually have. It leads to less code bloat, where, you know, software becomes more complicated. You just add features just because you're adding them. Sometimes we, you know, and this goes along with, you know, trying to scale and things like that when you don't need to. Totally. Sometimes, you know, maybe you don't have enough users yet. I guess you should just focus on what you have, before adding new functionality.
Yeah, even Levi, who I like honest developers. He's an honest guy. He says, you talked about this one some, and even he is guilty of it. basically don't over-engineer things and don't write code until you actually need to use it. So don't, you know, like you said, don't write this crazy back-end code to help scale if you don't need it yet, you know, because a lot of times you spend a ton of time, you know, debugging it, writing tests, trying to figure it out, and, you know, it may never actually even get used to the capacity in which you were expecting.
Another reason is, you know, you should be writing documentation, and if you start writing that new feature, you're going to have to start documenting it as well, even, you know, if it might not ever get used. And so kind of think about that ahead of time too. Be like, are you going to write the documentation on this new feature you're adding?
Well, if support not, documentation, you, might, yeah. You have to support it. I mean, we talk about this sometimes when you're talking about with Rocketship, but you were talking about some of these advanced features, and I was like, well, I mean, think about it too. Unless you really have a need for it, you also have to support it too, because if it breaks, you have to fix it. If people want to use it, you have to be able to explain it. And sometimes you may just open a door you didn't expect in the first place.
Absolutely. The next one, which is kind of on that same token, is keep it simple, stupid.
Who are you calling stupid, KISS. You jerk?
If you keep your app simple, it's less complex, less chance for bugs, easier to debug. And, you know, just keeping things simple, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, that's right. No, enough, I mean, said, I guess.
Yeah, it seems simple, stupid, but
let's just keep it simple.
The truth is, keep it simple. A lot of times you'll over, you know, complicate stuff, and, you know, if you're doing dry stuff, you're having small chunks that do one thing, do it well, you can use it all over your code and get it done. It works great.
The next one is broken Windows theory. So there's this book in 1982 written by James Wilson and George Kelling, and they were social scientists and looked at the they had this theory that if an apartment building started having a few broken windows, it wasn't too long before the apartment just totally collapsed and there was a lot more crime around the neighborhood and things like that. What does that have to do with software? Well, if you start programming and, you know, you write tests and you make sure everything's not broken, and then all of a sudden a few weeks go by and you kind of like, you find a bug and you start adding some functionality and you kind of say, well, let's just skip the test for now. And, I got a test that's not passing, but I'm not sure why. I'll just commit anyways.
Yeah, whatever.
You now have a broken window in your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And it isn't too long before you start copying and pasting code and doing a lot of damage to your projects. Yeah. So don't live with broken windows.
Totally. I actually do this with cars. This is sort of an interesting parallel, is that every time I buy a car, and I'm one of those people, like when I buy a car, even if it's a used car, I want it to look nice. I really don't like to buy junkers a whole lot, especially if I'm paying money for it. So like, you know, the recent car my wife and I just bought, like, you know, it was a 2002, but it looked really good for a 2002. And so one of those things, like, you know, you keep it and you baby it and you baby it and it looks nice and you wash it and you keep it looking nice. But then all of a sudden, earlier this year, we had a giant hailstorm. You know, it broke the plastic of, you know, one of the lights in the back, and it got some dents all over it. You know, it ended up being really expensive to try and get fixed. So my wife and I decided that, you know, we just would live with the dents. But since then, I've sort of watched the car. Like, all of a sudden, it's not a big deal that if the inside gets a little dirty, you know, we're not as anal about picking it up and trying to keep it clean because it's kind of broke. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. You know, same with my phone. Like, the first time I dropped my Droid, like, dropped it on the ground, it got a nick in the corner. It was like, all of a sudden, I could use the phone, because before it was like, oh, God, I don't want my Droid to fall, you know, and I take it slowly out of my pocket. But after that first drop, when it's blemished, it's like, all of a sudden, you're like, throwing your phone out, it hits the ground, you're like, oh, whatever, and grab it, and you know, it's just, you do it with a lot of things, but definitely happens with programming as well.
I think another analogy too is with like cleaning. If you clean your house and have it all spotless, you'll kind of keep it clean for a little bit longer. Totally. But as soon as you start noticing the little messes around, you just kind of just add to them and gets worse and worse over time. So don't let your projects have broken windows. Fix them right away. The next rule is the 90-90 rule, and I'll just kind of read the quote because it's kind of funny. The first 90% of the code accounts for the first 90% of the development time. The remaining 10% of the code accounts for the other 90% of the developing time. If you were able to follow all that, the total development time sums up to 180%. This just kind of is a funny rule. Tom Cargill was the guy that said it, is just coders totally underestimate what it takes to do a project. And oftentimes it takes basically twice as long as you think that it's going to take.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with that is always remember that. And I think the best thing is how a lot of people compensate for that is they just say, I just double it. And I think that's the wrong thing, too, because it's also, I mean, looking at getting better at estimating is a science. And so we always talk about, you know, if you can measure it, you can manage it. So looking at your estimates, figuring out, you know, on average, you know, you thought this was going to take a week. It took you 2 weeks. That means, you know, then you're getting more accurate estimates, which means you have to inflate less. So don't just use that as an excuse to gouge your clients and say, oh, it's going to take three times as long and you're going to have to pay me as much. And because there is no honor among thieves.
The one that you already mentioned was the rule of three. If you find the same code in your project that has been duplicated three times, it's time to extract it and make it into a new function or class. This rule is introduced by Martin Fowler. He's known for, you know, test-driven development, refactoring. He's got some books out, big in the Agile community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm sure I've got a few places in my project where I have, you know, three things that I need to get going and start refactoring.
It's a code smell. You can find it. So our last one, and this one I think is really important. We kind of hit on it, I think, last week a little bit, and it's something you need to a lot of people need to think of. I fall prey to this a lot. There is no silver bullet. And so the quote we have here is, there is no single development in either technology or management technique, which by itself promises even one order of magnitude improvement within a decade in productivity, reliability, or simplicity. So there is no one thing that's going to fix everything.
And I believe that was a study. You should probably quote silver bullet.
But the thing is to remember is, and I mean, I fall prey to this a lot. It's like I read a book on extreme programming, and all of a sudden I'm like, extreme programming is the fix to every solution ever. Every team should be using extreme programming. Absolutely. You know, then a week later, I'll read like a Scrum book, and I'm like, Scrum is the best thing in the world. Everybody, every team should be using Scrum. And the truth is, there is no silver bullet for every one team, every one group, everything. There is no technology, you know, all of a sudden, like, because, you know, NoSQL databases become popular, they are not the silver bullet. They're not going to fix everything that involves scalability. You can't just say, man, using a relational database is bad. Using a, you know, a NoSQL DocDB, all of a sudden, it's going to make everything mm-hmm. faster and better, because there is no silver bullet.
Absolutely. So it was a book by Fred Brooks in 1986. He's also the guy that did the Mythical Man Month, which I've heard about.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, he found that there was no silver bullet ever in the, you know, the history of the studies he's done that produced the order of magnitude in productivity, like you said.
Yep.
And that about wraps it up.
Yeah, that wraps up this episode of Face Off. I want to remind you guys that you can subscribe to the show by going to faceoffshow.com/subscribe. Also leave feedback for the show by going to faceoffshow.com/feedback. Remember, we are not a show on the Sci-Fi Channel. We are a web technology podcast, so be gentle when leaving us feedback, because oftentimes we've had some very cranky people sending us very cranky emails and tweets. And it's not us. It's just, you know, we're cool guys. So be nice, and we will see you guys next week.